Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Valeura's Half Year Results 2020 conference call and live webcast. I am Sandra, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Michael Müller, CEO of Valeura. Please go ahead, sir.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for participating in our half year 2020 results presentation. Today with me for the first time, our new CFO, Beat Fellmann. He's now 22 days in the office, and he will talk you through later the balance sheet and our full year outlook 2020. I will start talking you through the presentation that is, as usual, available on our web page, and I will turn now to page 4, where we summarize the half year results. Over the last couple of months, we had the privilege to prove our strength as a company and as a management team in an unprecedented global crisis that had a significant impact on our industry. We started very strongly into the new year. January and February were ahead of budget. We were very pleased with the progress we made along all business units, especially also pleased with the progress we made with the rollout of the new SBB locations. In early March, the unprecedented worldwide COVID-19 crisis started to impact then our out-of-home consumption core business, specifically at high-frequency locations, very strongly. During the lockdown, the public transport and city center footfall collapsed, and after the lockdown, stay-home, home office policy, international travel restrictions, and health and safety measures in the public space also put quite a lid or reduced the footfall in our network significantly. As a management team, our focus since the beginning of March was on implementing the health and safety measures to protect our employees and customers, the securing the business operations and the long-term stability of our network, and most importantly, adjusting our cost base, including postponements of major investments. As of June, we see that our operating business are back at the break-even level, and we expect in H2 now customer frequency and sales to continue to recover. However, the long-term impact of the trends towards home office specifically remains to be seen, and we still operate in a quite a dynamic market environment. Having said that, we still expect a positive full year 2020 EBIT. Most importantly, despite the significant impact of the COVID-19 crisis and the impact it had on the consumer behavior and footfall during the crisis, we strongly believe in the long-term attractiveness of the out-of-home consumption and food convenience market, and with that confirm also the strategy and the strategic measures we presented as part of our annual results presentation earlier this year. On page 5, the key financial metrics of the first half 2020 that has been heavily impacted by the COVID-19 crisis. On a group level, external sales reduced by 18%. GP margin fairly stable at 43.6%, negatively impacted by a change in the mix of retail and food service business. On a positive note, EBITDA at almost 22 million, 21.7 million, significantly lower than in the previous half year, but still in positive territory. The EBIT with negative 10.9 million Swiss francs. Again, significant reduction compared to the last half year and documents the severity of the impact the crisis had, specifically during the lockdown on our business. Again, on a positive note, the free cash flow only deteriorated 4.1 million compared to previous half year to 11.5 million Swiss francs, documenting the quality of the cash generation across our businesses, which leads then to a leverage ratio of 2.9x, which in our view is a clear indication of the strength of our balance sheet, even during that very challenging market environment. On the right-hand side, the breakdown into the two divisions, especially on an external sales level, you see the clear difference between retail and food service. Retail sales declined by 13% in the first half year, whereas food service is -36%, so quite a stronger impact on the food service business. On an EBITDA level, retail at 19 million, food service 2.1 million, and on an EBIT level, retail maintained a positive number, whereas food service is in the negative with 11.3 million. I turn to page number six. During the COVID-19, especially the lockdown, but also post-lockdown, footfall and sales collapsed. The recovery post-lockdown was significantly lower. As a result of that, we closed stores, and we adjusted the opening hours. On that page, you see on the left-hand side, the retail external sales on the bottom part of the chart have been impacted specifically in April, but already in March with -15% compared to half year 2019. Slightly recovered and stabilized in May and June, but no further significant recovery. As a result of that, on the top part of the chart on the left-hand side, you see shaded in gray, only roughly half of our stores operated under normal condition, between 36% in April and 30% in June of our stores had adjusted opening hours, which again has an impact on the sales in these stores. At the peak in April, 11% of the stores were actually closed. On the food service side, you see a far more severe pattern. We started with +4% and +3% quite strong into the year. Then as of March, with the peak in April, sales collapsed to -47% in March, and then almost -80% in April, and slightly recovered now to -40% in June. As a result of that, you see again on the top part of the chart that we had to adjust opening hours throughout the crisis far more significantly. In April, we had to close almost half of our stores. This is also a result because in the Netherlands, Austria, and partly in Switzerland, we had to close the shops based on government orders. I turn to page number seven, where we break down the sales development in the four different clusters that we shared with you in the past. You see the transportation hubs, which includes the airports, so all the public transportation hubs, railway station, airports, city center, shopping malls, and other. Other being stores in the agglomeration and at gas stations. we shared with you in the past that half of our sales are generated at transportation hubs, and you see here that these locations have been impacted the most severely in terms of external sales development on the retail at negative 28% throughout March to June, and in food service at negative almost 60%. This documents part of the differences you see in the sales development overall of these two divisions. Then city center, slightly better, but far lower exposure with 10% on the retail side, far bigger exposure on food service, specifically based on the stores we operate under the brand or the banner of Backwerk, with negative 53, again explained by stay-home orders during lockdown and slower recovery. Shopping malls have been almost on previous year's level on the retail side, with 30% exposure, sales exposure in that segment, which definitely supported the retail business and the sales development, but not compensated fully what we lost at the transportation hubs. And agglomeration gas station, if you compare it to transportation hubs, for example, you see with negative 11% in retail and 10% exposure, we're rather in relative terms performing stronger. Food service has hardly any exposure to the market so far. On page number 8, the sales development resulted ultimately, or the unprecedented crisis resulted in the drop of sales of 18% and net revenues of 18.8%. But you also see that the food convenience categories slightly reduced the share of the overall sales. This ultimately has then also an impact on the margin development. Press, tobacco, and books increased the shares overall on an external sales level from 56 to 61%. I turn to page number 9. In terms of the net revenue, I will not talk you through all the details, but what you can see quite clearly here is that the retail overall has been holding up stronger than the food service division. Specifically, if you look at the Swiss numbers, retail Switzerland negative 9.8% compares to food service Switzerland, which is mostly Bretelkönig and Caffè Spectacolo, which had to close with negative 39.3%. On page number 10, the drop in sales resulted also in quite a significant reduction of our gross profit with negative 21.2%. On a positive note, you see that also we were able in a very short time frame to adjust our costs, reduce the cost base by 10.3%, which then results in an almost 50% mitigation of the losses on the GP gross profit level. On page number 11, further details on gross profit. Here you can see that across the group, profit margin was, given the severance of this crisis, widely maintained. It is overall affected by a higher share of retail with lower margins than the food service business. But you can also see that the most significant impact we've seen again on food service, given the far higher sales decline, with negative 33.5% GP reduction in local currency, whereas retail managed to maintain more or less the margin both in Switzerland and in Germany. On page number 12, In terms of operating costs, and operating costs in our reporting always include also the D&A, we were able, as a management team and as a group, to reduce our costs compared to what we budgeted to the in the half-year result by almost 15%. Bear in mind, the crisis started in March. This is the full half year. I think this indicates how much focus and emphasis we put on the cost management. All the units have been affected, including to a significant extent administration and corporate functions. If you look at the numbers, specifically Retail Switzerland, they indicate that you have a lower reduction in cost. This is explained by the fact that we had a transition from franchise stores to own stores, which then ultimately results in a higher cost base. But also in Retail Switzerland, the cost reduction was in a very similar order of magnitude than in the other units. On page number 13, EBIT drop of 10.9 million, but probably even more striking as a number, the reduction of almost 54 million compared to previous last year, I think documents very well the significance of that crisis. Again, on a positive note, all units contributed with a positive EBITDA in the first half 2020 and show an increasing upward trend since the end of the lockdown. If I go on page number 14 through the details of the EBIT, you see again clearly that the retail division contributed positively in both geographies, Switzerland at break-even, Germany with 1.5 positive contribution, also a result of cost savings in Germany, the retail business in Germany that we initiated already last year that yielded a positive impact in the first half of this year. On the food service side, again, as a result of the far weaker sales performance in that division, we see a clear negative EBIT, but this negative EBIT has also been impacted of, in relative terms to retail, far higher D&A, which is the result of the higher capital allocation, mostly coming from our manufacturing B2B pretzel business that had, at these low EBIT numbers, over-proportional impact and therefore pushes the food service division in the negative territory. On page number 15, EBIT translates into net profit and EPS. Important to understand, we had negative foreign exchange and IFRS effects adding to the result, on the, but we also at the same time benefited of partly offsetting incoming tax benefits, and ultimately the net profit results on a group level to negative 15.9 million. On page number 16, the first important element in terms of an indication of how we performed along the cash and the cash generation, the CapEx, we continued to invest in the expansion and innovation. You see that very clearly, almost 90% of the investments we made have been in expansion and innovation during the first half year. Overall, roughly 70% of the CapEx has been spent compared to last year, so there is only a roughly 30% CapEx reduction compared to the first half year in 2019, which indicates that we continue to invest, and we invested mostly along two dimensions. First, the SBB refurbishments, where we completed until March 22 POS before we then temporarily stopped due to the crisis the rollout. And secondly, and very importantly, the B2B capacity expansion that we managed to complete in Q1 2020, already in a phase in the midst of the beginning of the crisis. And I'm very pleased that we ultimately managed to complete these expansion investments at roughly 10 million. That's why the share of the food service CapEx is also quite higher than the retail in the first half year. Now, turning to free cash flow, I think the number that stands out here and documents, in my view, quite well that even during quite a severe crisis, we are able to generate significant amount of cash is the reduction of the free cash flow compared to half year 19 of quote unquote only 27% to 11.5%. It's important to understand that we benefited from extraordinary networking capital management measures that are also, in my view, a clear indication of the strengths of the partnerships we have with our key suppliers. And with that, I hand over to Beat, who will talk you through the balance sheet and the outlook 2020.
Thank you, Michael. First of all, I'm particularly happy that I have the chance to guide you on my 22nd day through balance sheet and outlook. And maybe as another introductory remark, I'd like to stress out that I'm really impressed about the cost savings achieved in such a short time frame, how quickly and consistently the management has reacted, and how important the positive impact out of these measures are, and which can be presented today. And one consequence out of this, I think, is that in the balance sheet, unlike the P&L, where the impacts are dramatic, it's like a tsunami, the balance sheet stands solid here without any major impact. So the total assets or the total balance sheet amounts to 2.5 billion Swiss francs, almost unchanged. And here, I think, a very important figure in general, but in particular during such a crisis, is the amount of cash which is available, freely available, which stands at 127 million. This pile of cash brings is a kind of a safety cushion, which I think is a very nice achievement. This leads then to net debt, almost unchanged, slightly above 300 million. Here as well, I think, a very positive outcome. If we then bring P&L figures in relation to balance sheet, to net debt, then, and Michael has talked about this important covenant figure as well, the net the leverage ratio, where we see an increase from 2 times to 2.9 times, certainly a figure which will go further up, further north, so to say, but still is still in the time frame of our, or in the frame of our covenant. The headroom here is still pretty big. On page 19, then another important discussion, and that's maybe linked as well to the equity ratio. I forgot to mention that before, the equity ratio is at 45%, but overall we have heard and seen discussions about the solidity of the financial profile of the Valora Group, and here I think it's very impressive that first of all, important to mention the syndicated credit facility, the CFA, has been successfully renegotiated during the crisis, by the way, and increased from 50 to 150 million committed credit line, unused, entirely unused at the moment. I think that gives flexibility. And this credit facility allows us the refinancing due in 21, the 72 million to be made, as I said, under this credit facility. So basically no maturity refinancing need until 2023. That brings me then to the outlook. And of course, unfortunately, our crystal ball is maybe as grey as yours, but there are some positive signs, and that is depicted on the left-hand side, the mobility trend, a clear, steep recovery trend on mobility since the lockdown, and based on this trend, we expect a further recovery as well in the second half of 2020. There are some very important trends regarding mobility which have to be seen in which direction they're going to develop. Certainly one might have a kind of a lasting impact, that's the entire situation about home office, schooling as well. I just received an information that Harvard has now launched a new program, Harvard at Home. So these kind of things, they might have a very lasting negative impact on mobility overall. The other ones, which is the shift from public transportation to individual transportation, the safety and protective measures, but as well concerns about unemployment and the economical environment, they might be more of a temporary nature. So here we are optimistic that over time, being in a dynamic environment, of course, but over time, we will see further recovery. On page 20 then, for me, this is kind of the mother of all slides, so to say. You see the tremendous negative impact on EBIT and on sales indices as well, on a very short-term, steep decline. Lowest point in April, where we had seen a sales indices of only 67%. But, and that's the good thing, since then, a clear, steady recovery with break-even overall for the operations within Valora. So here we assume a further positive development. It's going to be most probably not the levels we have seen before the COVID-19 crisis, but still sales indices to be expected above 90%, which is then, as we said before, a further recovery of the overall situation. So good reasons to be optimistic. So that brings us then to the guidance. I've talked about recovery. I have said that, of course, the dynamic and kind of uncertainty remains high. But assuming the recovery we're talking about, which is based as well on a higher percentage of food business, and food business, as you know, has a better margin, we assume a clear positive effect out of the mix of our business, and that is particularly driven through an optimistic assumption that in our B2B business, the volume increase will have a significant leverage impact on profitability. Cost savings, they are painful, but they have to go on. We have ideas to even accelerate them, and here we have heard some concerns on analyst side that we might be faced with further support needs of our partners, agency or franchise partners. I think here we can say that we have assumed a further increase in these forecasted figures already, so that is reflected in our assumption, which leads us then to kind of a positive view that the full year 2020 EBIT is going to be positive. That is, I think, a strong statement. Nevertheless, we have decided not to guide beyond 2020 yet, not yet, but we will invite you for a trading update end of October, where we try then to use our crystal ball and for a outlook of 21 and beyond. With these remarks, back to you, Michael.
Thank you very much, Beat. In the following section, I will talk you through the COVID-19 related measures and our investments along the strategic priorities. I turn to page number 25. The main focus of our efforts to cope with the crisis, we structured along three dimensions. First, the health and safety measures. Second, the supply chain and operations measures. And thirdly, the protection of the liquidity and the profitability. On the first dimension, health and safety, the main goal was to protect our employees and our customers. We also financially support employees and partners already since the beginning of the crisis. In terms of operations, I'm very pleased that we were able to contribute with our network to a securing of the basic supply, definitely important role we played in a number of locations, specifically in agglomerations, at gas stations, where we saw increases in footfall. And I'm very pleased that we secured ultimately all the operations without major challenges and ultimately guaranteed that the supply chain ran smoothly throughout the crisis. We also continued to invest in our digital initiatives, an element that I will talk you through later. In terms of liquidity and profitability protection, we mentioned already a couple of times the cost-cutting initiative, the delay and termination of a couple of investment projects, and then ultimately the renegotiation of the credit facility that is currently unused but creates additional flexibility going forward given the still quite dynamic market environment. On page number 26, I mentioned that I see it as a significant achievement in terms of the cost reductions that we realized and that we were able to mitigate almost 50% of the sales-driven GP decline within only a few weeks. If we break down these initiatives, you see that 60% of these cost reductions come from personnel initiatives, which include short time work, optimized working hours, and includes also on a net basis temporary partner support that we provided. 20% of the 42 million cost reduction are related to other operating expenses. This includes multiple variable operating expenses, but also significant reduction of our administration costs. And also 20% contributed reductions in rent. First of all, a lower variable rent, ultimately resulting from lower sales. However, significant part of that has been compensated by ultimately a higher rent that we started to pay at SBB after the tender process. But we also got rent concessions, especially for the lockdown phase, from a number of landlords. However, rent will remain a focus for the second half of the year, and further adjustments are here targeted. I turn to page number 27 to provide you some further details on personnel and other expenses. In terms of short-term work, I think the striking number is that 50%, 50% of the Valora employees were affected by the short-time work. This includes the POS, administration overhead functions, but also to a significant part the production and logistics. We optimized working hours, which reduces ultimately capacity, personnel capacity requirements. And in terms of temporary financial support, we invested in selected agency and franchise partner to support the economic viability of their business, and on top of that, help them to benefit from government aid programs that were fairly diverse along the different geographies we operate our stores in, and to a certain extent also fairly complicated for our agency and franchise partners to understand. So we supported them to benefit also from these programs, but on top of that, we supported them out of our own pocket. In terms of other operating expenses, main contributor have been variable shipping and freight costs, but also improved contractual relationships we established for shipping and freight in the past that started to yield here first results. And on top of that, the reduction of administration costs. On page number 28, some further information on the rent situation. As you know, the rent is a significant part of our costs. And so far during the lockdown, obviously all the rent negotiations have been focused on the lockdown phase. The most rent agreements have no adjustments implemented post-lockdown so far, also as a result of a slightly weaker recovery than anticipated both by landlords and the tenants. And thirdly, the main challenge we see here is that given the significance of the sales deterioration, we have no adequate variability of the rent due to the true minimum rents guaranteed just by the fact that minimum rents are at a level where they cannot absorb sales declines as we have seen it during the crisis. So the target going forward is ultimately to adjust rent to sales and customer frequency where we see that these frequency reductions prevail and are sustainable, and where we can anticipate that we have to expect or where we have to expect that these sustained lower footfalls remain, and ultimately in these situations we seek further rent deductions to reflect then the change basis of the initial rent agreements in these locations. There will be a different discussion and a different situation with almost each of the landlords. This requires quite some time and effort that we put in already since the beginning of the crisis, but more and more we move now these discussions, and I must say very open discussions with almost all landlords that reflect the quality of the partnerships we have with these key landlords. This will be the main topic of these discussions going forward, and we expect that when the crisis sustains in terms of lower footfall, that we can ultimately adjust some of the rent agreements. Important in the outlook that Beat has given you, we do not anticipate, we only included in our statements already tangible results from these discussions, obviously already in our actual results as well, but also in the outlook, we build in only the tangible expectations towards adjustment and not exclusively our view of the situation here. If I turn now to page number 30, I would, towards the end of the presentation, turn your attention to our strategic priorities. Despite COVID-19, we confirm our strategy that we communicated earlier this year, and we will continue to invest along all the strategic priorities. I think it's quite understandable that the main focus of the discussion, be it internal, be it externally, has been on how we cope with the crisis, but we also invested during the crisis already and continue to invest along these priorities, and ultimately going forward it will be even more important that we deliver against our own expectations in terms of focus and investments, mainly in the B2B space, where we increased capacity now significantly, where we are extremely well positioned in terms of market position, technology available to benefit from the current market situation, where quite a few of our competitors are in a, as we see it, a little bit more challenged situation. We will continue to expand our Foodvenience initiatives and Foodvenience network, most importantly with the refurbishment of SBB POS that will continue, and we continue to invest in our digital innovation already during the crisis and will continue to do so going forward. If I turn to page number 31, some further details on the B2B capacity expansion that is now ready to be leveraged. I'm very proud, and I see it as a major achievement of our team, our B2B team, that they were able to complete all the planned capacity expansions in Q1. Some of the final implementations of this expansion has been completed already in crisis mode. We managed to increase the capacity in Germany by 20%. We doubled on a very low level the capacity in the US from 1 to 2 production line. And more or less with the completion of this expansion, especially in Germany, we experienced then the significant downturn in the sale, especially or mainly because we operate with our products in the out-of-home market and to a certain extent also in the retail, mostly grocery channel. And the grocery channel has not been able to compensate what we lost in the out-of-home market where we were exposed to similar market trends than what you see in our own food service division. On a positive note, the U.S. team managed to remain EBIT positive with their business, mostly because they were able to shift their client portfolio quicker, also given the smaller size of the business, towards new channels, for example, direct delivery channels, and maintained actually a very positive trajectory here in terms of benefiting from the increasing capacity that we put in place. Going forward, we will expand not only further our product portfolio that we offer to the market, but we will also start to establish new distribution channel based on the new capacity that is it, that is now available in Germany. And as we speak, staff starts to return increasingly to the production, and I'm quite optimistic that we see further improvements over the coming weeks in that part of the business. If I turn to page 32, we cover the SBB rollout or the refurbishment of the SBB locations. We completed already 48 refurbishment, mostly K-kiosk formats as of now. I mentioned earlier that in January, February, I was very pleased with the development we saw at these locations. We were definitely on track with the refurbishment, not only in terms of number of rollouts, but also in terms of the expectations in terms of change of the assortment mix and sales development. Now, as a result of the COVID-19 crisis, we had to postpone and delay the refurbishment of 50 locations. This is quite a substantial number, but put it into perspective of the overall refurbishment program, this reflects only 20% of the overall refurbishment and affects mostly K-kiosk formats. Now, going forward, we started already to or continued with the rollout already with the conversion of 8 former Migolino POS at excellent locations. These refurbishments and new store openings for us will be completed in July and August, and we expect that in Q4 we are back to full swing in terms of the refurbishment and trying to catch up also some of the delay that resulted now from the crisis. If the rollout plan is, as it is presented right now, on track, we still expect that we can largely complete the refurbishment as of the end of 2021. But obviously this depends still, first of all, on some of the detailed details in terms of the planning that is required with SBB, but also obviously in terms of the broader market environment, including potential additional lockdown related to a second wave or other elements that could affect that. But in general, we're still optimistic that we can largely deliver against the initial plan and catch up a substantial part of the delay that resulted now in the last couple of months. On page number 23, we document what we completed so far in terms of digital initiatives. And internally, it was very important for us that we continue to push ahead with these initiatives. We continue to hire and strengthen our team. We're up now to 20 employees, and the employees are here mostly engineers that work on these initiatives. We didn't reduce the effort throughout the crisis, which documents the importance and the strategic priority for us. we focused on, or continue to focus on, the automated store, so the AVEC box. We got some very positive and strong customer feedback and response on, for example, the AVEC box at the ETH Hünkerberg, where we extended the term there already two times, especially during the crisis. I think it's obvious these kind of formats where you can shop fully automated and independent have been received both by landlords and the customers very well. We're also very proud that we've been awarded last week by a Global Innovation Award from one of our partners, SAP, for, as they said, and I quote, creating the convenience store of the future with SAP Cloud Platform. I think another confirmation that, as I see it, we're definitely working on the right topic, and we have to put now even more emphasis on these efforts or on these initiatives to get even sooner to a level where we can start to roll out or move from a concept, from a pilot to a store that we can actually start to roll out. On top of that, we launched a new Café Spectacle pre-ordering app. We also worked on other loyalty initiatives, trying to improve customer engagement and registration in our stores. And a very small project, AVEC Now, in the delivery space, that had no significant sales impact, did not help to compensate what we lost in the store, but was very important for the team and for the group in terms that we managed within a very short time frame, roughly 2 weeks, to launch and pilot a delivery service out of a selected number of stores and test this new promising platform to potentially going forward, not only during crisis mode, but also post-crisis, even engage more closer and even more direct with our consumers. And with that, I turn to the last page, 34, in terms of key takeaways as we see it in the first half year 2020. I mentioned we had a very good start into the year of all business units until February. So this made it only more painful than as of March, the COVID-19 crisis hit us quite severely in terms of the financial, the net revenue decreased by 18.8%, but we are also very proud that we managed within very short time frame to compensate almost 50% of the gross profit decrease with our cost reduction efforts, resulting in a positive EBITDA of 21.7 million for that period, and the free cash of positive again of 11.5 million, and the EBIT at 10.9. The renewal of the syndicated credit facility, we see definitely as a very positive result that creates and maintains financial flexibility and stability going forward, since that credit facility is currently unused and has been increased by 100 million to 150 million in the midst of the crisis in April. Sales and earnings recovery started post-lockdown. It has been slightly slower than probably also some of you expected. The market environment is still quite fairly dynamic, but already in June, on an operating business level, we managed to break even. Further cost mitigation is in process, with a focus on these rent adjustments I commented on earlier, mainly for the post-lockdown period at locations with a sustained negative COVID-19 impact on the footfall. And based on that, and the current development that we see and the expectations towards the sale, we see a positive full year 2020 EBIT. And for us, most importantly, we confirm our strategy, we confirm and reiterate the attractiveness of our out-of-home consumption market, and the outlook for the food convenience market remains, in our view, unchanged, and we will continue to invest along all the strategic priorities that we shared earlier this year with you. And with that, we can start the Q&A. Thank you very much.
The first question comes from John Cox from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys, just about. Thanks very much for the presentation. Lots of detail there. Probably the most granular presentation I've seen so far during this this crisis. So much appreciated. You seem to be doing a really good job on that. But obviously, you know, we're trying to tease out what is structural cost declines and what is maybe, you know, government support efforts. If I look at that, you mentioned the 40-odd million operating lower operating costs in H1, 60% of which was staff. Can you give a bit breakdown on that staff? How much did the government contribute to either in Switzerland or Germany on that? So that's the first question. Second question, just you mentioned rent deferrals and maybe rent not being paid. Can you give us some sort of granularity on that? Because typically, you know, your H1 rent bucket, if I include right of use, other rental, rent charges, H1 would be around 100 million Swiss francs. It's around 200 million, I think, for the year as a whole. You know, how much of that actually did landlords just say, oh, you don't have to pay? And how much is deferred? And do we have to be worried about that coming into either the cash flow statement in H2? Or anything else we need to worry about there. So really, yeah, just you know, what have you removed cost wise, and then what have you got from the government? You know, and just to you know, continue along that line, the government support schemes, as far as I'm aware, they all run out after 6 months, so that will be September. Obviously, we can see you were profitable in June, even with lower sales. But I guess that's because of the government support schemes rather than, you know, underlying profitability. So, again, if you can give us any sort of thoughts on that. And then just on the cash flow statement, again, you know, should we be thinking about any rents or anything coming in from H1, which has been deferred, as you mentioned? And then you seem to be saying, look, there's a lot of work going on in the working capital. I wonder what your best guess is for free cash flow for this year, now that you're predicting an operating profit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John, for your questions. And I probably start with question number one in terms of how much government support contributed to personnel expenses. I mean, first of all, obviously, government support contributed significantly, and on both levels, in our own stores, in our own administration staff, and also on the level of our agency and franchise partners, which indirectly you would have to include in that number. But having said that, I think part of the rationale of that government support is also to basically bridge a crisis in a way that you use these funds, first of all, very responsibly as a company, and secondly, you help our employees to bridge a quite a challenging situation for them. Having said that, I think bear in mind, ultimately, personnel costs are very variable for us. If we would consider to close stores and reduce the network or adjust other cost structural costs related, which then result in personnel expenses that we have not completed yet. So bear that in mind. Secondly, you cannot look at the personnel costs on a completely isolated level, because what we have provided you is basically on the net level. We supported also our agents. So there is already a fair amount included of cash out on our side to support our agents and franchise partners. And on top of that, we topped up the short-time benefits that our employees received from the government, initially in March to a 100% level, in May to a 90% level, and in June in Germany to an 80% level. Switzerland is already at the 80% level. So with the decreasing scale, we topped up. So you would have to factor all these elements into the overall personnel cost reduction contribution. And I appreciated your comment regarding transparency, but it would go a little bit too far if I would talk you through all the different elements, how they contributed here. I think just to give you an indication in terms of short-time work, I mean, it's and I'm a little hesitant because there's so many elements factored in, again, indirect support. But let's assume you're at the 25% level of the overall overall savings. But again, I think it would be too simple now to assume you can just expect this to expire going forward at a certain point of time, be it in 12 months, 18 months, whenever, since there are a lot of other offsetting elements. But at the same time, I think quite clearly government support was a very effective instrument that helped us already to keep a lot of stores open that without that support would have not been economically viable to keep the stores open. And I think the best way to look at that number is if you look at the retail store closures, where we worked mostly for 50% of the network with adjusted opening hours. I see there you see quite clearly that we agreed with quite a lot of partners that we keep the stores open, and this was possible based on these short-term work contributions. If they expire, we have to adjust the variable cost base. That's what we indicated will continue to happen anyway. So market stays dynamic, our cost base stays variable. We will have to work along all the cost elements, and this can then potentially also result in portfolio adjustments. And again, there, bear in mind, this does potentially lead to sales decline and margin decline, but not necessarily, especially at locations where we have a very high density in terms of store. If you, for example, look at the main station in Zurich, where we have quite a few stores in a very short distance. So that will be my answer on your first questions. Second question, I understand you asked what's the cash impact of deferred rents on H2. I mean, first of all, there has been an impact in H1 by rent deferrals that you see in the network and capital development. That's correct. Many of them were of shorter nature, meaning not affecting H1 fully. Some of them did. So you will see a deferral in H or an impact, a cash impact. But I think I go as far as saying that the impact from other network and capital management initiatives have been far more contributing than these rent deferrals, where we basically defer payments with some of our partners or renegotiate the payment terms with some of our long-term suppliers. So this impact has been far bigger, but it's also important to Beat and to myself that you understand there has been quite a substantial extraordinary element in the cash generation included. And I hope with that I answer your second question. These are the two questions I put down. So
maybe I'll come back on the on the, because what we're trying to work out is, like, let's just say structurally footfall is down 10-15%, you know, for the next couple of years on some of the, you know, on a lot of that public transport locations. Are you confident you can get your rents down by 10-15% and your staff costs down by 10-15%? You know, within a time. Now, maybe there's going to be some dislocation temporarily where for a while you've got the higher costs, but are you generally confident that your model is flexible enough to really, if there is a rebasing on, you know, convenience retail in public transport hubs and a rebasing in terms of food service, people reluctant to go and, you know, into these places because there's lots of people around, et cetera, that you can get your cost base in terms of the rents and the staff costs down to reflect that? And you know, how long would the transition be, and would there be pain? Would we see this pain in Q3, 4 when the governments fall off, for example, these supports, or are you pretty comfortable you can manage this? Because I think you've done a fantastic job in the sort of the acute part of this crisis. But obviously now we go into the sort of chronic long-term repercussions. We don't know ourselves what will the structural repercussions are. We just want to gain confidence that you think you have the flexibility to bring your costs down to match whatever happens to your revenues in a post-COVID world.
And the way I would answer that question is, John, a significant amount of our costs are variable. I mean, there are certain limitations where you have only one person at the store, so you cannot operate the store with less than one person, for example. But in general, our staff costs are very variable, and they have proven to be extremely variable throughout the crisis. I think the only difference is that if government programs expire, the measure will be different. As of now, the main measure has been short-time work to basically bridge the pain, as you call it, and going forward, potentially, this is more related towards staff reductions. Then ultimately, potentially, can also lead to store closures or more store closures. But typically, and we shared that with you, I think, in the past, you see that a substantial amount of our profitability sits in an underproportional part of our network. So, I mean, there will be a point where store closures have also a significant impact, but in the order of magnitude, what we anticipate in terms of sales development for the next 6 months, but also 18 months, there is enough variability and flexibility to adjust definitely on a staff level, both on a store level and in a central function administration level. How much pain will be required? That's something that we adjust quite dynamically, on one hand related to government support, but also on the other hand related to sales development and further detail of these programs and potential programs, we then definitely share with you in October as well, when we have some more visibility both on the programs but also on sales development. I think if it comes to rent in terms of what's our read and of the likelihood that we can adjust rents, that how I understand your question, and what's the transition cycle. So my concern is rather the transition cycle than the ultimate adjustment, because there is a market for these rents, and we are very important partners, and we strongly believe that you will see
a recovery. I think BEA documented quite well in terms of both on a sales level and profitability level how steep the decline was and how strong also the trajectory, the recovery was now. And there will be a market for these rents. And so you will see potentially in locations where you have sustained low footfall. All I anticipate is that over time you will see adjustment. The concern is the time. I agree with that, and I don't have a good answer for that. All I can tell you is basically two things. First, we are in very close discussions with all the major landlords, and all the major landlords start day by day, understand better and in more detail the impact the crisis has both for themselves and for not only us but all their tenants, and therefore start to come up with new solutions. It's not only the rent reduction or minimum rent reduction, but it's also flexibility in terms of opening hours, portfolio adjustments, and these kind of measures that are extremely relevant and that we use quite extensively in the retail space. For example, if you look at the numbers we documented in the presentation in terms of opening hour adjustments. So we are in very close discussions. I think even I can understand that they're also in a difficult situation, most of these landlords, and they have a certain incentive to delay these discussions towards a point where we know that some of the footfall declines will sustain, and the far easier discussion is basically looking backwards and discussing what we have seen since post-lockdown, and that is reflected in most of these discussions. And secondly, and probably even more importantly, we have not built in high expectations, or the way I would call it, or I called it, is we built in tangible expectations based on the current discussions in our plan going forward for both rent, but also, and they have mentioned that on the personal expenses side in terms of support for our partner. So the positive EBIT is not the result of a wishful thinking what we can achieve with both rent and government support, but based on what we see is tangible and realistic, and this includes the partner support, which will be more significant in H2 than in H1.
Okay, on the rent, is it right to assume that the minimum annual guarantee at the moment is effectively like 80-90% of your rent bill? Just in a general, I know it'd be different everywhere. And then just to follow up on that cash question, you think there'll be free cash flow this year then, based on what you know today?
So in terms of the free cash flow, you can expect that we generate similar amount, maybe even slightly higher in the second half year than what we generated in the first half year. I mean, that's as far as I will go for cash guidance for that year. This is, again, the result of a very detailed exercise where we not only forecasted operating performance of our business, but we included all the network and capital measures, again, and as always, with realistic expectations. And so I'm quite comfortable that you see similar, potentially higher cash generation in H2 than in H1. That's on as far as I go in cash flow guidance. In terms of the more specific question, rent adjustments, as you say, it's in every location, it's different. Every contract is different. Every situation is different because with Deutsche Bahn, we have a multiple of number of contracts for each single location, whereas with SBB, we work rather with frame agreements. So, but to generalize that, I think the 90% is too high. It's rather, if I would have to consolidate it across, and this is not weighted by number of contracts or the rent we pay, but it's rather between at the lower end at 60% and at the upper end 80% for the different business units, with the exception of Retail Switzerland, where we are closer to the 90% since we renewed the contract with SBB for the retail business fairly recently.
Thanks again. Really appreciate that. Thank you.
The next question comes from Volker Bosse from Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Hello, Volker Bosse. Baader Bank. Thanks for all the provided information so far, and welcome, Beat, at Valoras Management Board. All the best.
Thank you.
Coming to my questions, delighted by the page 21 in special, and you show there that on average, at Swiss train stations, footfall is currently down by -10%. I'm asking about more granularity. How much is the footfall down at inner city locations or at shopping malls? And how, for example, also Zurich Central Station should compare to these average figure provided? I mean, I guess international tourists are missing, and that could be a significant part in Zurich as well, but would be interested to get your view on the footfall by location, so to say. Second would be on the pretzel production. I suppose production is not running under full steam in the moment. So where do we stand in cutback of production output in the moment in Germany and in the US? And finally, a last question would be also on the Kurzarbeitergeld program, so this fiscal shortened working scheme. So how much or how many of your group employees have been included in the scheme in percentage of total employees, and where do we stand as of end of June, so to say? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your questions. In terms of footfall by location, I will guide you to the same source we used here, which is Google. You can go to their webpage, and they offer that service across multiple geographies. You can drill down exactly in the locations you mentioned. You can drill down to city center, you can drill down to airports. Basically, as far as I understand, they track our phones and have therefore a very good indication of changes in footfall. I do not have the numbers in front of me now, but for all the locations you ask, but go to the Google page and you get all the details. And I must say it was quite helpful for us to look at some of these numbers, compare different cities within Switzerland, Germany, and so on. So quite an interesting read. Unfortunately, Google doesn't make any prediction for the future. This would also be quite helpful. They haven't gotten, their AI engines have not predicted anything so far, or at least they don't share it with us. So that's your first question. Maybe the other thing I would add is that the most interesting shift in footfall we have seen is towards agglomeration and gas stations. You see that also on the page you mentioned, or on the previous page. This created a situation where some of our stores that have been rather less important, I would not call it overlooked in the past in our portfolio, became actually quite interesting contributors, mainly at very small train stations. And this pattern sustained throughout Switzerland and Germany. And in our view, is explained by the fact that people stayed home and then went shopping at their local kiosks in the suburbs, that they far less heavily frequent under normal conditions. And then secondly, I had the gas station. I think I mentioned that gas station, some of them, especially with the new AVEC format, performed very strongly here in Switzerland. But that's my answer for your first question. Second question, in terms of output, we do not answer these questions. We always try to be as transparent as possible, but it will go too far and it will be too helpful for potential other people listening into the call if we will share all the details in terms of capacity planning and current capacity. I think I mentioned in one sentence that now staff is returning far more significantly to work, and staff in our context is not only own staff but temporary staff as well, which also explains the variable nature of some of these costs related to the B2B business in the production. But I would not go further than that. But you can assume we are extremely well positioned, in my view, now to benefit from a market environment that has weakened some of our competitors. And the last question, in terms of short-time work, we documented that it was it has been roughly 50% of staff has been affected by short-time work. It's lower now, but it will remain dynamic. And I think this refers to the answer I've given to John's question earlier. As long as sales and market environment stays dynamic, cost management stays dynamic, and it will also going forward be a trade-off between ultimately using the short-time work or applying other measures related to personnel expenses, including layoffs, obviously.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you very much. All the best, and stay healthy. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Likewise.
The next question comes from Gianmarco Vero from MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Three questions from my side, please. So the first one is on the SBB refurbishments. As I understood so far, I mean, originally you planned to refurbish 100 stores this year. So far you achieved 22, if I'm correct. And then to really now achieve your target to still fully refurbish everything until the end of next year, what can we assume? What is your target now for H2? Is it reasonable to assume around 70 stores to be refurbished by the second half, and then over 130 stores in the second year, so in 2021? And can you also give some more details on CapEx perspective in relation to that? As I understand correctly, you once guided for 100 stores, costing you around 30 million Swiss francs, this whole refurbishment. Then the second question is in relation to the support payments also to your agency and franchise stores. Can you also quantify about how big the share of all your agency and franchise partners is, which really requires those support payments at the moment? And then just also on the last question is the expansion of your Backwerk and the Sego plans in Germany, Switzerland, and the Benelux. So by how many months do we have to postpone also our expectation there in relation to the expansion of your retail network? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gianmarco, for your question. First of all, to frame all the answers I will give you now is that we announced that as of October, we will come back to you with a trading update. All the guidance beyond 2020 will be given there. So I will be now a little hesitant in commenting on all the effects, including by how many months some of the initiatives will be postponed. But I think I can build on what we communicated in the past. So starting with SPD, your guess is not completely off. I think we mentioned already it's 8 store plus a couple of others currently under refurbishment, and this may lead to, let's call it order magnitude 60, 70 store towards of the end of the year. At the 48, roughly 50 we have already, leaves us with 100 plus for next year. Put that into the perspective with the challenges we have, just time-wise and hard to predict environment, including lockdowns, safety measures during the winter and so on. I would leave that a little bit open. We're currently in discussions also with SBB how to structure that, because it takes two to tango here, including some of the government agencies to release these refurbishments. And but in general, it is possible that we fully catch it up, or to a very large extent, towards 2021. And secondly, it has been affecting so far mostly the K kiosk, which also improve and increase shelf space in food, but obviously the bigger move in terms of shelf allocation towards food comes with the other refurbishment. But your assumptions, that's how I would leave it, are not completely off. In terms of the CapEx, again, for H2, what you can expect that CapEx will be at similar levels, comparable to H1 this year. I think we shared that already in previous calls, that we expect that we will end up at the lower end of what we guide as a normalized CapEx in the past. If you add up the numbers, you get to similar, maybe slightly higher level, depends a little bit on the rollout plan. But I think this gives you a fair confirmation of what I said earlier with investors during the crisis, that you basically expect these kinds of levels. I'm a little hesitant now to go well beyond 2020, but quite obviously, if we increase rollout in 21, you will have a shift from CapEx that has been planned this year. But at the same time, we always include in our midterm CapEx plan also projects that, given the current situation, we not only postponed, but postponed not only by a couple of months, but postponed basically for longer. Secondly, you always have the effect that we do in the current environment, we can also source some of the projects at more favorable rates. And so I think for 21, to expect CapEx to increase compared to 2020, obviously fair, even bear in mind Q1, we complete the B2B, potentially order of magnitude next year, 100 million, not totally unrealistic. Which I think would tie with the number you had in mind in terms of number of stores and what it takes to complete an accelerated rollout. But I went already now with that number a step farther than what I framed initially. So please bear with us until October, when we have more visibility on the actual dynamics of the market and the planning. I think your next question was related to partner support, and there again, I'm not prepared to provide more transparency than saying that what we expect in terms of partner support, and this is a bottom-up, very detailed analysis that we ran based on store performance and quality of the partners. We have a pretty good view on what it takes to support selected partners And this view is fully reflected in the guidance that Beat has given you in terms of an EBIT positive result for 2020. If market recovers faster than what we anticipate, if franchise partners are stronger than what we built in, and or we support less and close more of these stores, this number will be reduced, but I'm not willing to share that number with you right now. In terms of how many partners are affected, I think similar answer. We have a very detailed view on this. And it's obviously not the majority, to make that very clear. But I will not go into details how many partners are supported, because I think this would only weaken also our position here as a company. And last question. I have a hard time to read my own handwriting now, of course, related to Bockwerk expansion. This I will definitely move into the trading update in October. Quite clearly right now we're in a very challenging expansion environment, and the focus has been with Bockwerk in securing the quality of the network rather than expanding the business right now.
Okay, fully understood. Thank you for also this very detailed presentation. I highly appreciate it, and all the best.
Thank you very much, Stefan.
The next question comes from Roland Wildmann from Research Partners. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello to everyone. We are already at 12:30. I don't want to make the call too much longer, and most of the questions already asked. So only one remaining question, which is really for interest, I believe. The IFRS 16 accounting makes it probably very complex to calculate what could be the impact if you get reductions on your rent side. Would you agree that, just as an example, if you get a reduction by, let's say, 10 million, and if the rent is amortized on 10 years, then the impact, the real impact on P&L is only 1 million? I mean, of course, there's a full impact on cash flow statement. I understand that. But on the P&L, you don't see the impact. Is that right or is that not right?
Thank you very much for your question. I definitely agree with what you said about IFRS 16, that it's complicated and hard to understand and read and to anticipate all the effects. But in that case, actually we got a relief or a simplification of the IFRS 16 accounting. This happened a couple of weeks ago ahead of the H1 result preparation. So I think the way you described it, would it have been if this new IFRS rule would not have been released, which is applicable on top of my mind until next year, mid-year, for all the so extensions or adjustments that are applicable until mid-next year, which, based on what I said earlier, of the dynamic of the rent discussion, you can assume affect all the discussions we have as of now. So there you see a significant simplification, and not that potentially far more severe impact on the P&L by rent reductions. But you mentioned, since we're already at 12:30, over 12:30, I suggest that if you have further details, questions regarding the details, Annette can provide you with the documentation of these new IFRS 16 rules.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from John Cox from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I just thought I'd come back and have another go, as it were. Basically, just on the B2B, a lot of granularity on everything else that's going on. Just wondering how the B2B part of the bakery is going. And then also, do you have a split for your customer base there, or your estimates? You know, just again, roughly a quarter is maybe hotels and restaurants, or a hotel, you know, a quarter is this, quarter is that. A quarter ends up in retail, you know, grocery retail ultimately. That could just help us a little bit in trying to model how B2B might develop over, you know, the next couple of months and quarters. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, John. So B2B is a fairly, a market where we benefit currently from a very strong position, despite the heavy impact the crisis had, specifically in the food service space. We also have significant partners in the grocery retail segment, but we have never broken it down further than what I think we have done in a presentation probably 2 years ago, where we showed that the majority of our business is related to small partners. So we are not significant. There's no significant dependence on single partners. But again, Annette can provide you with the chart where we document that, and we could consider to update it since it's slightly, not outdated. It's just old data, but in the principle remains, and that's one of the key strategic positions and decisions we have taken, that we do not create dependency on single partners, especially since we're building our business now on the new capacity in the US. It would have been fairly easy to leverage that capacity with not even a handful, but maybe a couple of partners. And we have not done that, since I do not want to have that dependency. So from an exposure point of view, to further break it down into which buckets we deliver, I think I will not go that far. The way I would answer it, you can assume, if you model what you see in food service with a slight time delay, was also the impact on the B2B. And I think that makes it even more difficult to model it, because you see always the delay in terms of stocking, unstocking, and so on. I think one additional information I can provide you was that there was one surprise on our side, which was grocery retail. Grocery retail, we expected that we can benefit from this increased footfalls and quite positive sales trend that a lot of grocery retailers have seen during, especially during lockdown, but also post-lockdown, since more people stay home. We have not fully benefited from that, and this is mainly related to shifts in assortment, which came a little bit surprising to us, because the products, mostly frozen products, we deliver to these grocery retailers actually are quite attractive products for these retailers, but it seemed like there were operational reasons and efforts to simplify the shelf on their side, so that we did not fully benefit from that, and that was probably the most negative surprise outside of general decline in food service sales that I will comment in terms of split. In general, B2B was also quite heavily affected. At the same time, I'm now, based on the most recent developments in the last couple of days and weeks in terms of order intake, I'm fairly optimistic that you see quite maybe even over proportional compared to or relative to other units recovery in the B2B, which then always also contributes fairly quickly positively, because we have a significant operational leverage. So we have a in terms of capacity, starting with the DNA, so the capital intensity, but also in terms of minimum required to operate the plants, you have a fairly fixed basis. As soon as sales increase, it levers quite nicely upwards. So, yeah, I'm fairly optimistic. to development over the next couple of months now in B2B.
Thanks again. Thank you.
And with that, I'm looking here at the overview of the webcast. There are no questions on the webcast, and I think there are no more questions remaining in the call. So with that, I thank you very much for participating in our half-year results presentation. I thank you very much for your interest and your questions. I hope to hear all of you towards the end of October when we provide you with our trading update. And so far, I wish you a nice summer and stay healthy. Thank you very much.